Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BiteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner Show. For network or show information, visit www.biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner. Today, my very special guest is Paul Smith. He is author of Parenting with a Story, Real Life Lessons in Character for Parents and Children to Share. Tell a young person what to do, play fair, be yourself, stick to the task at hand, and you'll most likely be tuned out. But show them how choices and consequences play out in the real world with real people, and impact will be far more profound. Parenting with a Story gathers 101 narratives from people around the world and from all walks of life, reflecting unexpected moments of clarity about who they are and how they should treat others. Paul Smith is a popular keynote speaker and corporate trainer in leadership and storytelling techniques, a former executive and 20-year veteran of the Procter & Gamble Company, and author of two books, Lead with a Story, A Guide to Crafting Business Narratives That Captivate, Convince, and Inspire, and today's topic again, Parenting with a Story, Real Life Lessons in Character for Parents and Children to Share. You can find out more about Paul by visiting his website, which is www.leadwithastory.com. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. And Paul is also available on Twitter and Facebook, both of them with the handle Lead with a Story. So with that, I'd like to welcome Paul to the show. Good day, Paul.
Well, good day, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
It is my pleasure, and this is one of my favorite programming topics, is talking about children and how to deal with raising children nowadays. I mean, it is a real challenge, it seems.
Yeah, I doubt that it's ever not been. we always think this is the toughest time to raise kids, but I'm quite certain my parents and grandparents thought the same thing.
probably so. I want to go ahead and basically for today's show, we will be going for 45 minutes for those of you listening. We will take a short break about halfway through. And if you have any questions that you would like for me to ask Paul, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or if you're listening live in the chat room, feel free to type in the question there, and I'll be sure to pose it to Paul. Okay. Paul. Boy, storytelling. It seems like, your focus with both Lead with a Story about business and leadership and Parenting with a Story revolve around storytelling. So how is it that you became so focused on that as a teaching technique?
Yeah, I think it probably took me 15 years into my career, mostly at Procter & Gamble, before I guess it finally dawned on me that the people that I admired the most in the company, that I kind of wanted to grow up and be like, were great storytellers. And so that kind of led me down the path of trying to learn more about being a more effective storyteller myself so that I'd be a better leader at work. And that, of course, is what led to the first book. But it was really in the middle of writing that book and sharing some of the stories that I was collecting from executives all over the world that I started getting a significant amount of feedback, consistent feedback from people. When they heard the stories, they say, wow, I think I could use that story at home with my kids. And I guess it dawned on me there after hearing that a number of times that there's a big similarity between leading a group of people at work and parenting children at home. In both cases, you're the one in charge in some way, and you're responsible for their care and development and their future success you're interested in. I mean, so there are a lot of similarities, and so that kind of led me down the path of, well, I bet the same, philosophy of using stories to help lead people to the right place as opposed to just boss them around might work at home just as well as it does at work.
Very, very good idea. As a matter of fact, when you went and started asking questions, you really kind of didn't approach it from asking for advice, did you?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Well, you know, I'll have to admit that I may have started that way, but that quickly led nowhere. So I had to abandon that that tactic. You know, when I would ask people to tell me their best stories or give me, you know, parenting advice or something, I would get platitudes like, you know, look both ways before you cross the street, or always be kind to strangers, or, you know, those would be obviously for home and for kids, not for work. But I got the same kind of thing for the first book, and I very quickly learned that if I want to get meaningful wisdom from people, the way to get it is not to ask them for advice or to ask them to tell you a story. And that's because most of our most meaningful life moments, we don't think of them as stories, and we certainly don't think of them as advice. You know, we think of them as things that happen to us. And so what I found to be much more effective is to ask people things like, you know, tell me about a time in your life when you learned a completely unexpected but very important lesson, or what's the biggest mistake you've ever made, you know, in life or at work, or, you know, or what are your three biggest regrets in life so far, or your three smartest decisions you've ever made, or describe a vivid memory you have as a child where you felt terrible about how you made somebody else feel. And those kind of questions seem to really elicit from people, you know, just a wellspring of ideas and important life lessons. And then the stories would just flow out of their mouths, and I didn't have to ask them to tell me a story. They came out with the right questioning.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I think there's a lot to be learned in general for many of us, to, you know, when it comes time to communicating with other people and trying to, you know, establish a good relationship, is to, you know, kind of pose our inquiry in that way.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to learn by mistake like that, which is what I do.
Very much. Yeah. Now, the stories that you have in your book, first of all, I do want to let people know that you break down the book into two parts, who you are and how you treat other people. Were those, as you were going through and kind of getting feedback, you know, from those people who you spoke with, did they kind of naturally fall into those two categories? And how is it that you really kind of decided on the different types of characteristics that you highlight in the book?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it did not end up the way I thought it would. You know, I had a preconceived notion about what are the most important, you know, values and virtues and character traits people would have. But instead of starting with those and trying to find stories to fit them, I went the opposite route. I just interviewed 100 people around the world from 20 different countries around the world, all kinds of walks of life, ages and ethnic backgrounds and income situations, and I asked them those kind of questions that I mentioned to you earlier to find out their most important life lessons. And so every person I interviewed, I ended up with 8 or 9 or 10 different stories. So if you do the math, I probably had 800 or 900 different stories collected at the end of this year-long process of interviewing people. And I then just looked at those stories and for each one wrote down, what is the key message or lesson, life lesson in this? And, you know, it might have been about ambition or open-mindedness or creativity or courage or hard work and perseverance, or it might have been about kindness or patience or fairness or whatever. And I just wrote them all down and just to see where they would all end up at the end. And it turned out that every one of the stories would fit into one of 23 different character traits. You know, it's the ones that you'll see in the table of contents of the book. And so I found that surprising that such a small number of categories really fit such a large number of stories. And it impressed me a bit that people from all over the world in all walks of life, it turns out, we're all kind of interested in the same sets of character traits to have. You know, it's some of those things that I just mentioned. And as far as how they fit into who you are and how you treat others, that was just as I looked through them, it became clear that about half of these are character traits about how we are ourselves. You know, so it's the first few things I mentioned, like ambition and creativity and curiosity and integrity. But the other half of them really are about how we treat other people. So are we kind to other people? Are we patient with them? Are we fair with them? Do we have humility? Do we show respect to them? Are we a good friend to other people? So that was just a kind of a convenience thing. It's really the magic was in the 23. So what are those character traits that people apparently are finding valuable in their lifetime? So valuable that when I ask them what their most important but unexpected life lesson was, these are the kind of things that came up.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I went through and looked at the list, I mean, I have to admit that I was surprised. I mean, you know, in a way, I was kind of surprised that, you know, at some of them. But then I thought, well, you know, I mean, it this makes sense, you know, and these are things that I, you know, wouldn't have thought of. And we're going to talk about a few of them shortly. But, well, that, you know, that to me, it's wonderful that you were able to kind of just go in there and, you know, just with an open mind, being able to, you know, see what the world thought of what was important for character. Well, you know, I have a question as far as the storytelling. You know, one of the things that, first of all, you know, this as I went through and you know, read about parenting with a story, the first thing that popped into my mind is the old fables, you know, that we used to, you know, go and I thought, you know, this is kind of like an updated version of that, you know, where we, you know, have stories, but there is a message attached to them.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation with one key difference, and that is that Aesop's fables are, of course, fictional. They're just made up. And that's one of the things that I wanted to do. I wanted stories that were as powerful as Aesop's fables, but that were real. These are real things that happen to real people, which I think just makes them a bit more powerful when you share them with people. That they're not just some, you know, 400-year-old made up story, but these are real things that happen to real kids and adults in their life, and could happen to you and your kids.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, and I also think that one of the benefits of having a real-life story is it also serves as a way to maybe help guide parents into maybe identifying, you know, stories that they can tell, you know, kind of a sample. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, I hope that people read these and often think, oh, my gosh, something like that happened to me. In fact, I'm going to tell my kid that instead of the one I read in this book, and that would be fabulous.
Exactly. Well, you know, what makes a good story? I mean, through all of your listening to people and, you know, and like you say, you probably got like a good 800 type of stories from the 100 different people interviewed. What are some of the characteristics that you have found really makes for a good story?
Yeah, good question. So I think one thing is, the protagonist or the hero or the person the story is about, if you have somebody that's relatable to your audience that is in a predicament that your audience might find themselves in someday, that's highly attractive to adults and kids, you know, because they can see, oh my gosh, you're going to tell me a story about some teenager who ran into XYZ problem. And guess what? I've got a teenager who's running into that exact problem. Well, I'm pretty highly motivated to finish reading your story because I want to find out how this kid did. If he, you know, was successful or if he got in trouble, did he go to jail? You know, what happened? Because I want my kid to have the benefit of that. So that's one thing, a relevant hero in a relatable, you know, kind of challenge. But the other two things I think that are very powerful in stories is the emotional content and a surprise. The emotional content, you know, that's emotion is, I think, what turns a fact into a story. And in fact, I think it was novelist E.M. Forster who said that a story is nothing more than a fact plus an emotion. You know, and he gave a brilliantly simple example of it. He said, if I were to tell you that the king died and then the queen died, well, that's not really a story, is it? That's just a fact or two facts, as it were. But if I were to tell you that the king died and then the queen died of grief, now that's a story, right? And it's a story because you can all those last two words of grief, because of that, you can all of a sudden imagine what must have happened. Oh my gosh, the queen must have so loved the king that when he died, she stopped eating, and so she withered away, or maybe she was so distraught that she took her own life. I mean, those stories just pop into your mind because of the last two words of grief. So it's the emotion that turns the fact into a story. And then that last one, surprise, I think, you know, who doesn't love a surprise ending? I mean, that, just, a surprise ending to a story, just, it makes it so memorable. And that's what you want your kids to do with the lessons you teach them, is remember them, so that you don't have to teach it to them over and over and over again.
Very good point. Yeah, yeah. When I just wrote one book called Joy Potential and had a surprise ending in mind. It was, which is kind of popped into my head when I first thought of the idea. And it's funny because a lot of people comment about it. I mean, it, and it's funny that that's the, you know, that more than many of the lessons quote in the story is what people talk about first. So
yeah.
I can understand that, how important that is. Well, I want to talk just a few minutes more about how people can get started, you know, some tips for parents, grandparents, teachers, and counselors. And then we're going to take just a real quick break, like I mentioned. And then when we come back, let's talk about some of them, some of the stories in that you have in each of those areas, because, like you said, that's the key. Now, with basically getting started, you know, for parents who want to kind of get started with this as a teaching method for their children, there are basically several different types of barriers that may be common, you know, and then maybe you can talk about the advice. Now, the first one would be that I don't have any good stories to tell.
Right.
How would they deal with that?
Yeah, so it turns out, I think, most of us have a few really good stories in our past. And I know that for certain because out of, you know, the 100 people that I interviewed, every single one of them had two or three really good stories. And they, you know, out of 7 or 8 or 9 that they shared with me, every one had two or three that I thought was book-worthy, that, you know, that really warranted, you know, being published. And I think that's true for most of us. Now, the unfortunate thing is that none of us really has 100 great stories in our past. And that's why I wanted to write this book, was because I wanted parents to be able to have the collective wisdom of not just their own two or three great life lessons, but 199 others of us as well to call upon. But I think to find what those two or three or four really good stories in your past are, I think you ought to ask yourself the exact same questions that I asked people in the interview. And remember, that wasn't the first one that I tried that didn't work, the tell me your best story. So don't ask yourself
right.
that. But it's those right. others. It's, you know, tell me, you know, think about an important but completely unexpected lesson in your life, or the biggest mistake, or the biggest regrets, or the three smartest decisions, or time when you felt really bad about how you made somebody feel, or pick a value. Any value you want to teach your kid a lesson on, you know, call it appreciation of beauty, or forgiveness, or gratitude, or positive mental attitude, or whatever, and ask yourself, you know, think of a time in your life when you learned the best lesson you ever learned about that value. And whatever mm-hmm. happened to you that taught you that lesson, tell your kids about that. Because if it taught you that great of a lesson, it will teach them just as great of a lesson hearing you talk about it.
Yeah, and obviously if you have an emotional attachment to that particular event or story, then that's all the better, right? Because
yeah.
that's emotional component.
Yeah, and you almost certainly will have one, because that's probably why you remembered it when you asked yourself that question. Think about a time when this you learned a lesson about this. Well, you're probably going to think of the most emotionally poignant times in your life. So almost certainly there will be a good emotional component to it.
Yeah, great. And another aspect for people to consider is when is the best time to tell stories? You know, is there any particular time better than others to be able to kind of offer that?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a couple of time-tested ones that your audience is already familiar with and hopefully is already taking some advantage of. You know, one, especially with younger kids, is bedtime. So wouldn't it be great if instead of the 14th time you've read them, you know, Goodnight Moon or some, you know, Disney or some nursery rhyme, that you interject, you know, some of these stories to really teach them a lesson, maybe even some of your own stories. You know, so that's obviously a great time to share, especially with the younger kids. For just about any age kid, dinner time is still a great time for stories. You know, we've unfortunately, in today's modern age, and here's an area where I do think our parents and grandparents had it better than us, is they didn't have to compete with all of the electronic and digital distractions in the house television, radio, video games, internet, et cetera. And people actually sat down and had dinner together every night, and they shared stories about what happened in their day. And I think you can still have that. You just need to make them sit down and have dinner and then share stories with them, real stories about what happened to you that day. And I think these kind of stories will come out. But I think the best time to share these stories is, I just call it opportunistically. Like when your kid is facing a dilemma or has done something wrong, or any time that you would think about whipping out some kind of platitude and telling them, you know, you really should be kind to strangers or whatever. Instead of that, tell them a story about it. And so right when they need the advice is the best time to tell a story about that advice.
That's great. Yeah, that's very important, because obviously that's where it would have the biggest impact, is right at that particular moment, especially if they're having an emotional reaction to whatever it is that occurred in their life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much. Okay, great. Well, I want to take just, again, that quick break, and then when we return, let's go ahead and start talking about some of the values in the stories that you had, okay?
Very good.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great, all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Paul Smith, and he is author of Parenting with a Story, Real Life Lessons in Character for Parents and Children to Share. And again, you can find out more about Paul and his book and all of the other services he offers by visiting his website, which is www.leadwithastory.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. And again, he is also on Twitter and Facebook with the handle Lead with a Story. So with that, we're back, Paul.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Great. Thank you. Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk about some of these values and stories, and so the listeners can kind of get a good idea of what's contained in the book. What under the who you are? Let's go ahead and since you have maybe you can kind of lead off with what you feel some of the most impactful values and stories were for you.
Sure. Yeah, let me start with one that I think could be a good example for the audience of how to use these stories to provide some guidance to your kids. And it's also a very personal one for me early on in the book. So it's something that actually happened to me personally. When I was probably 17 years old, I had a job at a manufacturing company. My dad got me the job there because he actually worked at that company and had made arrangements for me to get a job, the lowest guy on the totem pole. Sweeping the floors, et cetera. And I was so proud that when I finally worked my way up to get an office job, and so I literally was a file clerk in the personnel office. And I was even more happy when I found out that what that meant was that once a year, my boss was required to take me out and buy me a free lunch. And I was on what we called at the time Secretary's Day, which, of course, now is probably called Administrative Professionals Day or something. But I was just so excited that here I was a 17-year-old kid, and I'm getting to go out and all dressed up in real clothes, and my boss is taking me out to lunch. And the company that I worked for, actually everybody was taking all the managers were taking all their secretaries out to lunch that day. So we all basically rented out this one room in this local restaurant, and all the managers were there and all the administrators, me being one of them, was there. And I ended up at a table with my father and his administrator, and I was there with my boss. And I have to tell you that this was back in the mid-80s, right after a book you may remember came out called Real Men Don't Eat Quiche. very popular, tongue-in-cheek look at the feminization of the American male. And anyway, even if you didn't read the book, you know essentially what it's about. And, of course, no man in his right mind would want to order quiche after that book came out for fear of being branded something less than masculine, right? Well, guess what? That's exactly what was on the menu at this restaurant where we're eating. In fact, there was only two things on the menu that day. One was a club sandwich, and one was a quiche Lorraine. So the waitress is making the rounds at this table where I'm eating lunch, and, of course, all the men are very quickly ordering the club sandwich, and a lot of the ladies are ordering the quiche. And, of course, it gets around to my turn, and I, of course, very quickly order the club sandwich because I'm only 17, and I'm insecure enough in my masculinity as it is. And, well, it gets to my dad, and my dad says, well, you know, I've never had a quiche, so how about you bring me a half a quiche and a half a club sandwich, and that way if I don't like the quiche, you know, I still got my half a club sandwich. Well, the abuse began immediately. So the men at the table started harassing my father and essentially challenging his masculinity. And I'll just say, since this is a family show, in more colorful language than I'd ever heard in my life up to that point, okay? And, of course, I'm just cringing and sinking down lower into my chair. And I'm humiliated for him and embarrassed for me. And this abuse goes on for like 4 or 5 minutes. And finally, my father has had enough of it, and then he calls the waitress back over. And, of course, I'm thinking, oh, thank God, let's just, you know, let's get past this moment. And he calls the waitress back over, and he says, I'm sorry, I've got to change my order. I'm the one that ordered the half a quiche and the half a club sandwich, and I need you to take back that half a quiche or half a club sandwich, and I need you to bring me the entire quiche. And, I mean, the table was silent. You know, here are these men who were ready to high-five each other, thinking that they had broken his spirit with all of the abuse. And, in fact, he said, no, I'm going to eat the whole quiche, and I'm going to eat it right in front of you. And he did. He ate – I don't even know if my father likes quiche. But that day, he ate the entire quiche with a smile on his face. And I got to tell you, my respect for my father reached a new plateau that day. And I don't know if he – knew he was teaching me a lesson or intended to teach me a lesson, but he did. He taught me a very valuable lesson about how to stand up to peer pressure, you know, and what it meant to really be a man or to be just a grown-up in general. And what it means is not being so beholden or caring too much what other people think and doing what you think is right and what you want to do. And he taught me all that through this very simple, you know, ordering of his meal. And so it made a big impression on me. So here it is, 30 years later. I've got two boys of my own, a 15-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I tell them that story. I've told them that story two or three times, and I tell them to teach them that same lesson about standing up to peer pressure. Now, it's obviously not because I think they're going to order quiche someday and somebody's going to make fun of them for it. It's to teach them the broader lesson, and it's already happened a number of times. So, you know, my kid gets made fun of because his pants are around his waist where they're supposed to be instead of pulled down, you know, halfway to his knees, as is unfortunately popular these days, right? And they're giving him a hard time. Oh, your pants are too high. And, you know, he comes home and he says, Dad, the kids are making fun of me for my pants. They're not low enough. And all I have to say to him is, well, maybe you should eat the quiche. And that gives him the idea. I'll go back tomorrow, and I'm not going to pull my pants down like they want me to. I'm going to pull them up even higher. And they make fun of him again. Oh, your pants are too high. And he pulls them up even higher. And now he looks like Urkel walking around with his pants up by his chest, right? Now, you can see how quickly they would just get exasperated and walk away. You know, so here, that one story has coached my kid how to deal with this, you know, peer pressure situation without getting in a fight, without yelling and screaming, without getting in an argument, without, you know, without any of that. And without me telling him what to do, he figured it out on his own based on the example set in the story. So that, I think, is the power of stories like these, is not that the exact situation is going to happen to you someday and teach you how to do it, but that you can extrapolate from it, and your child can feel like a little bit of a grown-up in that they get to make their own big boy or big girl decisions based on the wisdom in the story without having mom or dad just tell them what to do. Because nobody wants that, right? Nobody wants to be told what to do.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's an excellent story. You know, and particularly in today's, you know, environment with kids, you know, peer pressure is, it's really, you know, it used to end, you know, when they left school. But now with, you know, the online, you know, presence, I mean, it's 24/7. And, you know, that's really an issue that I know many of them deal with. Well, that's great. And I think parents out there all have probably had some experiences with peer pressure, and you know, it would be valuable, I think, to be able to come up with their own quiche type story to be able to tell their kids. Yeah. Well, that's a great one. Now, just out of curiosity, under what title or value did you have that particular story placed?
Yeah, you know, that's actually the story I opened the book with in the introduction.
Okay.
So it actually didn't fit in any of the
category.
You know,
okay.
It could fit into another number, I suppose. But I thought your audience might appreciate one about kindness, since I think that's so universally important to folks. Would you mind if we went there next?
No, absolutely. And by the way, the kindness is under how you treat other people. So just to let the audience know. Okay, great. Yes, I would love to hear that story.
Yeah, so one of my favorite in that chapter is about a young man named Chad, who in high school, his senior year, was the captain of the basketball team. Every time they had a basketball game, the night before the big game, he would have, as the captain, he would have most of the team over to his house, and his parents would make dinner for them. And they would, you know, talk about the game and kind of prepare. But these are a bunch of teenage boys, right? So if you get a bunch of teenage boys in a room, eventually they're going to start talking about teenage girls. So, and that, of course, is what happened that night. And they ended up talking about one particular girl, and she was a very special girl, and I'll just call her Jenny. And unlike most of the girls that teenage boys might talk about, Jenny had some very visible disabilities. So she was in a wheelchair. She was blind in one eye. She was missing one arm, and the other arm had some kind of a disability, and she couldn't speak very well, so she actually used one of those computer synthesizers, kind of like Stephen Hawking, you know, to talk for her. Anyway, obviously all kinds of issues that she had to struggle with in life. Anyway, they were talking about her, and as you can imagine, they weren't saying very nice things about her. You know, this is not the captain of the cheerleading squad they were talking about. They were talking about this other girl, and so... And I guess the walls in the house were thin enough, or the boys weren't very discreet, and mom and dad like overheard all the awful things that these boys were saying about this particular girl. And in fact, it was the captain of the team whose house they were in who apparently instigated this conversation. Well, after a few minutes of this, Chad's father walks into the room unannounced and basically calls them to task on it. Says, I cannot believe what I've been hearing for the past few minutes coming from this room. And I'm embarrassed for you, and I'm ashamed, and I'm mostly ashamed of my own son. And before he finished, he actually said, I owe you an apology. I raised this boy, and I raised him better than that. And so I have let you all down. And he left the room, and it was very uncomfortable for a while. And you might think that that's the end of his parenting at that moment, but it wasn't. The next day... He showed up at school, unannounced, at noon, in the cafeteria. He goes and he finds his son at one of the tables, who, of course, is sitting with all the same boys he was hanging out with last night, the basketball team. He goes up and he says, "Son, where's the girl?" And, of course, Chad's looking at him, just scared to death. Like, "Oh, my gosh, Dad, I'm so sorry about what we said last night. Look, please forgive me. And, look, just don't embarrass me. Please don't embarrass me." And his father just repeats, "Son, where's the girl?" And so Chad points over to the other side of the cafeteria where there's Jenny eating at a table, probably by herself. And Chad's father says, "Okay, I need you to stand up. All the rest of you boys on the team, I need you to stand up and I need you to follow me right now." And he somehow convinces them to follow him. And they go over and they sit down at Jenny's table. And Chad's father asks her four questions that completely change the way these boys think about treating other people. He sat down and he asked, after introducing himself, he asked her these four questions. He said, "Jenny, who's your best friend?" Now, remember, she's got to type her answers out on this computer to, like, talk for her. So it takes a long time for this to happen. And so they have a long time to think about her answers. And her answer to that first question, who's your best friend, she said, my mom, Stacy. And, of course, for a teenage girl to count her mom as her best friend probably says more about her lack of social network at school than it does
mm-hmm.
her love for her mom. And that was
right.
lost on these boys, right? The second question was, what does your dad do for a living? Her answer was, I don't know who my father is.
Mm.
Another pretty tough answer for them to listen to. The third question was, how long have you been in a wheelchair? Her answer was, she typed out, my whole life. Here are boys that spend their days running up and down and jumping on a basketball court. And this just made it painfully obvious that not only has she never done that before, but she'll never do that.
Mm-hmm.
The last question is really the one that kind of cinched it for him. He said, what is it that you dream of and love to do the most? And her answer was, I love listening to the girls cheer at the boys' basketball games. All right? These very boys that had spoken so poorly of her last night, what she loves most in life is listening to the girls cheer them on. Okay, so if there was any shame that had not come out of them up to that point,
really?
It was all on the table now, right? You know,
wow.
And she now, of course, by then, the entire cafeteria is listening to this because, like, whose father comes in unannounced and sits down at Jenny's table and starts and gets the whole basketball team to go over there, right? That just doesn't happen. So everybody's listening and everybody hears this go on, and within a week, it's all over the school. Everybody's heard all this. Everybody knows a lot more about Jenny. The next week, Jenny was asked to be the honorary cheerleading captain, you know, and life for her changed in that school,
mm-hmm.
and probably for everybody else as well, because everybody really learned the lesson, which is unspoken in all this, which is, gosh, it's really hard to make fun of somebody once you know them. And if you just take the time to get to know somebody, then it's really difficult to mistreat them. And so that's what those boys learned, and probably everybody else at that school. And I would contend anybody who hears that story, you know, when you tell that story to your kids, it's going to be really difficult for them to not learn that lesson. And in fact, and if they don't, you can still help them do that. One of the things that I hadn't mentioned so far is one of the things I have on my website to help parents use these stories is a list of discussion guide questions. Like when you tell a story like that to your kid, then, you know, then you should ask them some questions like, well, are there any kids like Jenny at your school? And what's their name? And what else do you know about them? And where do they eat lunch? And who else eats lunch with them? And what do you think they would think if you went and sat at lunch with them next week? You know, questions like that to get them to find and leverage the wisdom in the story.
Wow. Well, you know, God, that is so helpful, Paul. I mean, you know, because so many times, you know, parents really, I think, appreciate that little bit of extra direction and ideas, because sometimes it's hard to, you know, think about, you know, how to, you know, I can tell the story and I can try to get the message across, but then, you know, how do I personalize it? What, you know, what do I ask? And you know, many times, you know, it's difficult to get that communication with particularly teenagers, you know, get that mm-hmm. discussion going back and forth. And, you know, those sound like some very wonderful open-ended questions that will basically stimulate conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think if all you did is read these stories to your kids, you'd be missing probably more than half the value. I think a lot of the value is that this creates a conversation between you and your kid. And I can tell you, as having, you know, a teenager now, is conversations are fewer and farther between. Any excuse to have a real conversation with my kid is welcome. Yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah, I guess we're down to 5 minutes. So do we have time for one more story? One more?
Yeah, we do. In fact, since I opened with one about my dad, let me close with one as well. And this is from the chapter on courage and how to find courage really to pursue your own dreams. And this also lets you know that you're never too old to parent with a story, because I came to my father for advice literally, you know, 2 years ago at the age of 45. when I was still working full time at my corporate job, and the first book had come out, and I was starting to write the second one, and I was really struggling with the decision: do I stay in my very safe, very secure corporate paycheck, you know, kind of job, or do I leave that and become a full time author and speaker, which of course is a pretty risky thing to do, you know, here too young for retirement and all that kind of thing. And so I wrote my father a letter, my 80-year-old father, a letter, and asked him for advice. And he wrote me back, and he didn't answer really my question very directly. He just told me a story about himself as a kid that I'd never heard before, and neither had any of my siblings. He said, "Son, when I was 5 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life." And he said, "I wanted to be a singer, you know, like a Frank Sinatra or Tony Bennett, you know." And he's 80. That's his genre, right, the whole Rat Pack. And he said, and I knew it for sure when I got to school in the first grade. The first week of school, the teacher asked if any of us had any special talent, you know, like singing or dancing or magic tricks. And he said, I raised my hand, and I said that I could sing. Well, of course, you know what happened next. Of course, the teacher is going to say, "Well, would you, you know, young Mr. Smith, would you like to stand up and sing us a song?" So he said, I did. I stood up, and I belted out my favorite song right there a cappella in front of the whole class. You know, the first time I'd ever sung in front of an audience, you know, other than my mom. And he said, I nailed it. He said, I got all the words, all the melody just right. I was so proud. When I finished, the other students and the teacher stood up and they applauded me. My first performance, and I got a standing ovation. And he said, that's how I knew that this is what I was destined to do with my life. And he said, you know, he went on in this letter that he's written me to say, unfortunately, that turned out not just to be the first time in my life I ever sang in front of an audience, but it turned out to be the last time. And he said, son, that was 75 years ago, and not a day goes by that I don't regret it. He said, life just got in the way. You know, I grew up, I went to school, I got a job, I met your mom, we got married, we had kids. You know, and I never had the courage to pursue this dream. And he said, you know, someday you're going to wake up and you're going to be 80 years old like me, and it's going to be too late to pursue your dream. You know, and as if that wasn't enough motivation for me, he literally closed out this handwritten letter to me, because he's 80 and he's hard of hearing, so I can't talk to him on the phone anymore, and he doesn't use computers, so he doesn't send me email. So here's this literally old-fashioned letter that I had to get from the mailbox and open up. He closes this letter with these words. He said, I'd love to see you achieve your dream, but that doesn't mean in your lifetime, son. That means in mine.
And
I got to tell you, that I mean, he laid the gauntlet at my feet in that letter and with that story and challenged me to pick it up, right? Not sometime off distant in the future, but like the clock's ticking right now. And so literally, Robert, 2 days later, I walked into my boss's office and I resigned from my 20-year career to pursue this dream. And that is exactly what I needed at that moment, was that story to give me the courage to do what I knew in my heart I wanted to do but just didn't have the guts to do. And I count that as the most impactful story that anybody has ever told me. And I cringe at the thought of what if I hadn't taken you know that advice.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So
boy, yeah,
courage to pursue your dreams.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, and that's a absolutely wonderful story. And like you indicated, and, you know, one of the questions, you know, you suggest for people is, you know, what have been some of your biggest regrets? And obviously that was for him, you know. And, you know, I think, you know, if we lived life, you know, kind of following our dreams and not taking chances and risks, you know, that's going to lead to those regrets. And I'm sure you're having a wonderful life of inspiring people and speaking and really, I mean, there has to be hundreds of stories that you're getting all the time of people. And that has to be very fulfilling.
No, it absolutely is in ways that I hadn't even thought of. It's wonderful to get to do what you believe that you were put here to do. And so I'd encourage any of your listeners to consider that story as your own gauntlet, and consider ways that you can go pursue your dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Paul, I really want to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed our chat, and I'll be sure to promote your book and have all the parents kind of get out there and start telling stories, and make sure I'll add it to my recommended reading list too. It's a great tool, and the discussion guide also is a very valuable asset. So I really thank you for your time chatting with me today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I very much appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Paul Smith, author of Parenting with a Story, Real Life Lessons and Character for Parents and Children to Share. And again, you can find out more about Paul by visiting his website, which is www.leadwithastory.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. And again, he is also on Twitter and Facebook with the handle Lead With A Story. So join him there. I'm following him and really look forward to reading his posts and following his tweets as well. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Children's Corner, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth's Children's Corner show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/ByteRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at ByteRadioMe. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.